Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tam Nirjagara Balavan Mina Sopi Aparai Saha Rito Jalena Mahata Grihito Matsya GVP. Two things in the transcription. It should be Balavan. You don't have to fix it, it's obvious. Just Balavan. And Mina is a long I. Hindi speakers would have a problem. Tam nirjagara balavan Nina sopya parai saha Kato jalina mahata Kuhito matsya jivibhi Tam nirjagara balavan Nina sopya parai saha Kuto jalena mahata Grihito matsya jivibhi Tam nirjagara balavan Mina sopya parai saha Kuto jalena mahata Grihito matsya jivibhi Nirjagara balavan Mina sopya parai saha Someone else? Nirjagara Balavan Nina Sokya Paraisa Tojalena Mata Hiko. Ladies, Tam Nirjagara Balavan Mina Sopya Parai Saha Tato Jalena Mahata Hito Matsya Jibibi. Tam Him Nirjagara, swallowed. Balavan, powerful. Minaha, a fish. Saha, he. The fish. Api, and. Aparaihi, others. Saha, together with. Ritaha, enveloped. Jalina, with a net. Mahata, huge. Grihitaha, seized. Matsyajivibhi, by fishermen who gain their livelihood from fish. A powerful fish swallowed Pradumna, and this fish, along with others, was caught in a huge net and seized by fishermen. Tam Shambaraya Kaivarta Upajahur Upayanam Sudha Mahanasam Nitva Vadyan Suditi Nadi Sudhiti Nadbhutam. The fisherman presented that extraordinary fish to Shambhara, who had his cooks bring it to the kitchen, where they began cutting it up with a butcher knife. Drishtvata dudure balam mayat vatyaya vedayan narado katayat sarvam tasya shankita cetasaha balasya tatvam utpattim matsyodara niveshanam. Seeing a male child in the belly of the fish, the cooks gave the infant to Mayavati, who was astonished. Narad Muni then appeared and explained to her everything about the child's birth and his entering the fish's abdomen. Sacha kamasya vaipatni ratir nama yashasvini patyur nirdagta dehasya dehot patim pratikshati nirupita shambarena sasudaudana sadhane kamadevam shishum budhva chakresneham tadarbake. Mayavati was in fact Cupid's renowned wife, Rati. While waiting for her husband to obtain a new body, his previous one having been burnt up, she had been assigned by Shambhara to prepare vegetables and rice. Mayavati understood that this infant was actually Kamadev, and thus she began to feel love for him. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti explains this story as follows. When Cupid's body was burned to ashes, Rati worshipped Lord Shiva to obtain another body for Cupid. Shambhara, having also come to Shiva for a benediction, was recognized by the Lord first, who told him, "You should now ask for your benediction." Shambhara, struck with lust at seeing Rati, replied that he wanted her as his benediction, and Shiva complied. Lord Shiva then consoled the sobbing Rati, telling her, "Go with him, and in his very home you will attain what you desire." Thereupon, Rati bewildered Shambhara with her deluding power and, taking the name Mayavati, remained in his house untouched. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Tadhati Shapadantikam. Mandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha. Shri Rupam Shagrajatam Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vitamstra. He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kam Shana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanshakalpitarubhyascha Kripasindhobhyayevacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Sri Vasari Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this is an extraordinary narration of how Pradyumna, having been disposed of by Shambhara, was swallowed by a fish, and the fish was brought to the demon's kitchen, and the child was discovered within the fish's body. Of course, this is the nature of the demons. Naturally, in their kitchen, they'd be preparing fish. But fortunately, Mayavati was assigned to the vegetable cutting department. And the child was given to her. Maybe when, well, we won't, maybe it. But anyway, she was a woman, and so, yeah, the cooks presumably would have been men, and she was assisting in some way, and they said, well, here's this child, well, give it to her. So the child was entrusted to Mayavati. And then Narad Muni came and explained what the facts of the matter were. This lady, Rati or Mayavati, had been the wife of Cupid, and Cupid was burned to ashes by Lord Shiva. Srila Prabhupada tells this story. I don't know if he takes it from Shastra or from Kumarasambhava. Sometimes he referred to Kumarasambhava, Kalidasa's play. But in any case, the demigods wanted to get a child. So they engaged this young girl, Parvati, wife of Lord Shiva, to arouse his sexual desires, because Lord Shiva was meditating. When you're meditating, you don't beget children. Unless, of course, you're Lord Brahma, who begets children by meditating. But they wanted to arouse his sexual desire, so they employed Parvati for this purpose, engaged her, not employed her, engaged her for that purpose. But Lord Shiva is so sober, dhira, that he wasn't sexually aroused. But the idea was the girl was engaged and Cupid was there to shoot arrows and arouse lusty desires. But Lord Shiva is so sober that he wasn't aroused, but he became so angry at Cupid that he burnt Cupid to ashes. Srila Prabhupada explains in the third canto that anger is the younger brother of lust. Kamat krodho bijayate. From lust, anger arises. So even if one can control lust, anger is still more difficult to control. These three obstacles are there. Kama krodha tata lobhas tasmade tan trayam chyajet. these three can lead to destruction. Kama, Krodha, and Lobha can lead down to hellish life. And therefore one is meant to control Kama, Krodha, Lobha. In any case, Lord Shiva became angry at Cupid and burned him to ashes. But here we find that Rati was faithfully waiting for her husband to get a new body. She was not a modern woman. Well, that's that. That husband's gone. Now what? I'm still young. I'm still good looking. I still have a life. She didn't think that way. She was waiting for her husband. Somehow she expected that he would return. But even if he didn't return, she wasn't going to find some new fellow. She was chaste to her husband. And then her husband actually appeared. It's explained by the Acharyas that Kamadev, Cupid, merged into the body of Pradyumna. Pradyumna is the member of the Chaturvyuha, the expansions of the Lord. And this Kamadev merged into Cupid, merged into Pradyumna. So Pradyumna was, in that sense, also Cupid, who was Mayavati's, or Rati's, husband. And therefore, she began to feel affection for the infant in a curious sort of way, because the infant was a child, but at the same time, the same infant was her husband. So her feelings must have been mixed. We find this in reports of Jati Smaran cases in the contemporary world, where some person, a child, remembers a previous life, where sometimes the child acts in relationship to others, not in her own, in the way that would be appropriate for her identity as a child, but in the way that would be appropriate for her previous identity. There's one case, a little girl remembered having a daughter, and then she was reunited with that daughter. And although she was the girl remembering was younger, was a child, she was acting with maternal affection toward the older daughter. That I'm your mother, but I've become small. So there are accounts like that of cases of children who apparently remember previous lives and express such mixed or even confused sometimes feelings, because they have to sort out being two people at the same time. So here, Rati felt affection for the child, but as we'll see in coming verses, it wasn't purely maternal affection. It morphed, is the vogue word these days. It evolved into conjugal attraction. She was attracted to Pradyumna in the relationship of a lover or a wife, which was surprising to Pradyumna, but was appropriate
And that will be discussed in coming verses. It's also significant here that Shambhara was worshipping Lord Shiva and wanted a benediction. So then what benediction? I want this woman. This is the kind of benediction that the demons want. They want power. They want sex. This is their inclination. Because they're in the modes of passion and ignorance. So this is what they crave. Kangshanta karmanam siddhim yajanti iha devata kshipram hi manasheva, okay? Siddhir bhavati karmaja. The less intelligent persons, including the demons, worship the demigods for quick results in satisfying their material desires. So Shambhara could have asked for some blessing for all human, for the welfare of the world, or for his own spiritual advancement. But instead, I want that woman. This is the nature of the demons. When they see a woman, the woman is viewed as an object of sense enjoyment, and specifically their sense enjoyment. And so this is their aspiration. Let me enjoy.
What is that?
Kama krodha cha samsrita. In the Bhagavad Gita it said that this is the demonic nature. They're kama krodha parayana. Just as the devotees, great devotees, are described as Krishna parayana, Narayana parayana. So the demons are kama krodha parayana. They're interested in, or they're absorbed in material desire and anger. Kama krodha. The two typically go together. Well, therefore, the demon asked Lord Shiva for that. I want this woman. And Lord Shiva is generous in granting benedictions. All right. But he also knew that there was some arrangement destined. So he consoled the girl, don't worry, it'll all work out. You just go with him and you'll see, it'll be okay. And Rati also didn't just leave things to chance, but she had a bewildering power. So she bewildered the mind of the demon in such a way that she wound up in the kitchen instead of the bedroom. All right, are there some questions?
Thank you, Maharaj. What is this pastime?
See, about that microphone, it doesn't really do much at the chin.
This, when Kamdev went to arouse Lord Shiva, so then he got burned up. But actually the person who sent him, Lord Indra, doesn't mention anything about some consequences to him.
About
Lord Indra, because he sent him.
Did Indra, is there any mention of some consequence to Indra? Indra is the one who dispatched Kamadev on this mission. So, is there a mention of any consequence to Indra? I don't know. I haven't read Kumarasambhava. So I don't know the story. I just know what Prabhupada told of it. But this is sort of typical of things that happen in the world. You send someone else to do your dirty business, and then he's the one who gets stuck. And you go off and say, well, I don't know. And that often happens. We engage someone else in that way, and then they get the consequences. So I don't know more than that. Another question? Yes.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, I am asking this question not related to Bhagavatam class.
You are. Maybe other people have questions related to the Bhagavatam class, in which case they have priority.
So can I ask something other than Bhagavatam?
Depends. Is there someone who has a question related to the class? That's generally what questions are supposed to be related to. Yes.
Maharaj, 5,000 years back, apparently, you know, demons would be eating fish, and you know, so was it something that used to be there during that time? Like only demons would be having this non-vegetarian items, or was it a general? I mean, because it's mentioned over here that the fishermen were connected with the demoniac family, so so it meant that the general population never ate any non-vegetarian food?
Did the general population eat non-vegetarian food back then? Well, I'm not so expert on the anthropology of 5,000 years ago. But at least in Manu Sanghita, it said that this fish is not approved. One who eats fish eats everything, because the fish float around in the water and they eat everything. So this fish eating is not in the mode of goodness and is not approved by Manu. But there were fishermen. We get that information here. And so there must have been fish consumers. Even now, in Prabhupada mentions in Jagannath Puri, because it's on the seashore, so that tendency is there for people to catch the fish and eat the fish. It seems to be quite an ancient profession. But the fish was never offered to Lord Jagannath, and the Brahmins would not eat these things. But people in the lower modes of nature made all sorts of things. Is that okay?
Harish. Thank you, Maharaj. Maharaj, it's related to what that Prabhuji asked about the consequences of Indra. I received one story just a couple of days back. I'll just narrate. It's a small story, Maharaj. Once there was a king who distributed food to the Brahmanas. One day, as he was giving out food to the priest, an eagle flew above holding a dead snake in his claws. Out of the mouth of the dead snake fell a drop of poison into the food that the king was distributing. No one knew or saw that this has happened. So the king continued distributing the food. The Brahmin who accidentally got the poison food died, and the king was feeling very sad about it. One of the servants of Yamraj, the god of death, has the service to distribute karma to the living beings. When this incident with the king and the poison food happened, however, he did not know who to give the karma. After all, it was not the eagle's fault that it carried the dead snake in its claws, since this was its food. Nor was the dead snake's fault, nor was its king's fault, because he did not know that the poison fell into the food. However, one day, few other Brahmanas entered the kingdom in order to meet the king. A lady was sitting next to the road, and they asked her, "Do you know where the king's palace is, and how we can get there?" She said, "Yes," and pointed at the right direction. "But be very careful," she said. "The king is known to kill Brahmanas." The moment she said that,
and criticized the king unrightfully, that moment the servant of Yamraj gave her the karma of killing the dead Brahmin. So what do we understand, Maharaj, from this?
First question is, where does this come from? This is the friend Purana. I think I've heard this story someplace. The conclusion is that judging things is very difficult. We don't envy Yamraj. He has to make difficult decisions. Mm-hmm. One has to be very sober. And we're not in that position to award karma, this person, that person. But it's indicated here that critics may not fare very favorably with Yamraj. Vindadi shunya hridam ipsitam sangalabdva. The one characteristic of the exalted devotee is that his heart is free from the tendency to criticize. Yes, nindadi. Ninda means blaspheme or bad mouth or criticize others. The low-class people or low-minded people thrive on that. That's like their food. If they can't get any fish, then they look for some fish stories. They look for some opportunity to criticize, and they get enlivened by criticism. Or it's just their habit. Please not. Oh, you're writing. As long as you're writing and not texting. Okay, writing is approved in our line. That's okay. I was quick to judge. So low-minded people, that's what they do. They look for some opportunity to criticize. And they may flatter themselves that they're upholders of justice, or they're speaking out for the truth, or they're guarding the gates of civilization. But really what they're doing is indulging their low mentality. That's illustrated in Chaitanya Charitamrita by, what was his name? No. Who was criticizing, who was feeding the Vaishnavas and then criticizing? Ramchandrapuri. He was just by nature addicted to finding faults. So he would find faults in the Vaishnavas. He found fault in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The way it started, or earlier on, he even corrected his own spiritual master. So in this way, we become better than others, because we're in the position of straightening them out or pointing out where they are wrong, whereas we, of course, are right. So it's an anartha. It's an anartha.
Of course, that anartha can be used in Krishna's service. It's all right to find out the faults of the Mayavadis. The Mayavad philosophy, Shunyavad philosophy, materialistic philosophy are full of faults. And if we turn our attention to criticizing those mistaken doctrines, then we get credit with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then we get credit with the Supreme. Of course, not just to criticize them, but to establish the correct understanding. Now that's allowed. But even then, it shouldn't be for our own sense gratification. Everyone else is a fool, but I am intelligent. That will get us in trouble. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, therefore, was giving all respect to others, but still he was tactfully pointing out what their faults were. Yes.
But was that sin of criticizing the king as bad as having the karma of Brahmahatya?
Was the lady who criticized the king as guilty as the killer of a Brahmin? Well, I didn't issue the verdict. But the king is the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Naranam cha Naradhipam. And therefore the king should not be criticized.
I would assume that doesn't apply to today's circumstances.
Today's kings?
Yeah.
Well, if you're going to criticize the kings today, Yamaraj may not come, but watch out for the king. There's something in Ecclesiastes to that effect, that don't curse the king even privately, because a little bird may carry the story. You can get in trouble. Yes.
Maharaj, practices like meat eating and illicit sex, we see are very much prominent in the society today. But presenting such realities before people in general may be difficult for them to accept, and you know, may be hurting to their ego. But as preachers of Krishna consciousness, we are anyways meant to do that. So how do we present such realities to people in general, so that instead of, you know, hurting their false ego, we make them favorable towards the process of Krishna consciousness?
When we present the realities of illicit sex, gambling, intoxication, and meat eating, that is the sinfulness of it, to people today without wounding their false egos, and how do we instead bring them to Krishna consciousness? Well, that's quite a chore. But we tell the thing the way it is. We tell the thing the way it is. And you have to use your good judgment how to tell what to whom. Or rather, how to tell it to different people. we risk hurting people's false egos. We have to tell the truth. And people's false egos may not always come away feeling happy. But we have to tell the thing as it is. Now, if you have the gift, then you can speak it in such a way that even though you're speaking harsh truth, it will be accepted. Satyam priyahitam chayat. Those in the mode of goodness can speak words that are true and at the same time pleasing. There are ways to do it, and some people are better at it than others. I'm not very good at it, so I'm not the best person to ask. Brahmananda Prabhu told me a story, or he told it to several people, that when he was first coming, he had previously been connected with some girl, and he had the picture of her in his wallet. So at some point, Prabhupada saw the picture and he said, "Not very pretty." So then Brahmananda thought, "Well, yeah, why do I want to be associated with a girl who's, you know, Prabhupada doesn't think is very pretty?" Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm probably the wrong person to give a seminar on how to speak pleasing words. Trying to think of some other examples. Prabhupada gives the example of correcting the daughter-in-law by correcting the daughter. That's a strategy. Because the daughter, if you correct her directly, she'll be hurt and rebellious. So then the daughter-in-law, if you correct her directly, she'll feel hurt. So then the mother-in-law scolds the daughter. "Why are you doing it this way?" And the criticism, of course, is directed toward the daughter-in-law, but because it's, in one sense, misdirected or pointed in a different direction, so then that gives the daughter-in-law the necessary space to accommodate the instruction without feeling attacked. It's what's called in psychology a transderivational search. One hears the instructions and then sort of searches on the radar, where does this apply? Oh, it applies to me. But because you had to go through that, instead of getting it, as they say, between the eyes, then thrown in your face. So then it becomes, all right, we can handle this. Or sometimes it's done with stories. Narad Muni would tell some story, and it's really about the person being spoken to. But he doesn't come out and say, "You're living just like a dog, you're wasting your life, you're a fool."
But instead he tells some story. And again, by transderivational search, the person hearing the story gradually gets it that this is a story about me. So that's another related tactic, telling stories such a way. I once knew a person who, so it's really, now I can say anything about that person because I'm beating on his head. It's really about you, but because it's not about you, because it's about a person I once knew, I can say all these disparaging things toward him, about him, and you don't feel directly attacked. So that's another strategy. Or sometimes Prabhupada would take the positive side. That is to say, rather than criticize the unwanted behavior, he would praise the proper version. That in India we do this, or something along that nature. And then the person thinks, oh, then I should do that. Well, Prabhupada once told Jadarani, back in the old days, the women would wear, you know, jeans and all sorts of... Now it's coming back, but back in the... things go full circle. Back in the 1960s, so the women were coming and they were wearing, you know, jeans and, you know, what Western women wear. And somehow, on some occasion, Jadarani was wearing a sari, and Prabhupada said, a woman wearing a sari looks very feminine. So that's another way of saying, you know, those stupid pants really looked lousy. But positively. Sometimes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would, or Prabhupada also, would criticize by saying, oh, you're very intelligent.
Maharaj, thank you for your explanations. Would like to know, generally when we hear Shaktyavesh Avatar, that a living entity is empowered by a spiritual potency. But here we are seeing that Kamdev, apparently a material demigod, is taking shelter of a spiritual expansion of the Lord. How do we understand this concept?
The Shaktyavesh Avatar means living entities and endowed with spiritual potency, but here we see that the material potency is taking shelter of the incarnation of the Lord. So how do we understand that? For the Lord, there's no material. Everything's spiritual. Dharmaviruddha bhuteshu kamosmi bhartashava. Kamadeva is also instrumental in the service of the Lord. So even Kamadev can be engaged in Krishna's service. From Krishna's point of view, there's nothing's material. Everything is his energy. The Prabhupada gives the example, the state builds a college or the state builds a jail. From the state's point of view, they're both good purposes. From the prisoner's point of view, the jail is not very good. But from the state's point of view, the jail is as necessary as the college. So they're both legitimate state purposes. So sarva-kala-vidam brahma, finally, Krishna is everything, and everything about Krishna is spiritual. So even the material energy, it's chanurupam api yasya chacheshtate, so the material energy is serving Krishna. Maybe from a distance, but she's also engaged in Krishna's service.
So the Kamadev also has a place in Krishna's service and therefore can also take this position. Is that okay? Okay. And we're supposed to end it this time, right?
Yeah.
Sorry I didn't get to ask all of your off-topic questions. Look for another opportunity. Okay. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. The Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premanande.
Very well, how are we doing?